And again, thank you, Mr. Fuqua and Mr. Burrell.
They all showed up for my fund balance reporting.
Don't lose part of them. Mr. Baker, you want to pass your administrator's report down?
They all want a little money less than governmental accounting.
Yes, they do. It's really boring, but real.
It is not. It's very important, though.
I know it's important.
Because you had to speak, you can have decisions and choices of future. But I'm going to make it not so boring by not talking in bad, bad accounting terms.
Okay.
It's just something we have to get through. I know. It can be very boring, my job. I know you are. But you're right.
I wish I understood as much as you do.
Mr. Baker.
Next is the county administrator's report. First item is Wings and Wheels 2010 Fall Festival will be held Saturday, October 2nd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Sussex County Airport in Georgetown. Last year, approximately 3,000 people attended. This year's event will profile World War II veterans and their stories, as well as a car show with an estimated 250 registrations. We wish to thank the Georgetown Chamber of Commerce and the many volunteers and sponsors who are assisting with this program. Sussex County Records Management Center open house. Next Tuesday on the 5th, the County Council will host an open house and tour the Records Management Center, located at the former Sussex County Emergency Operations Center at the Industrial Air Park. Mr. Dan Parsons will provide a tour, show the progress that is made in providing productive records management services for the county government offices.
What time will that be? It doesn't have a time on that.
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, okay.
That will also be on the agenda.
All right.
Property taxes due date, again, September 30, Thursday. Payments received after September 30 are subject to 1.5% per month penalty. Payments sent by mail must be postmarked no later than September 30. Taxes can be paid by mail, online, or in person. Tax office is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and can be reached at 855-7760. Thank you.
Anything else for Mr. Baker? Not Ms. Webb.
Thank you. Okay, it's time for a little governmental accounting 101. It's a little dry, so bear with me. But in February 2009, the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards, which Dave and I refer to often as the GASB Board, issued statement number 54, fund balance reporting, requiring us to report our fund balance differently, and this does affect the County Council as far as actions they may take in the future. The fund balance is the section of the financial statements. And the fund balance basically is created from excess revenues over expenditures over time. It's accumulation of net income or loss. And it's an indicator of an organization's overall fiscal health. And in simplistic terms, it's sort of like our savings account for revenue shortfalls or unanticipated expenditures without adjusting tax rates each year up and down. For instance, for an example, the last 3 years, fiscal year 07, 08, and 09, we had a deficit, which taps into our fund balance. But at that time, we don't go and adjust our tax rates up and down each year to compensate for that because we have fund balance, and that helps us meet our obligations and run our daily operations in times like that, and also it allows us to balance our budget. So the GASB standards that were introduced don't change a lot. Basically, it's changing some of the terms, and I had handed out in your packet synopsis of the changes and some definitions and some new terms that we will be required to use on our financial statements. So what this does, it enhances the usefulness of the fund balance information presented in our financial statements. It provides a clear fund balance classification and definitions now, and this new rule establishes classifications based on to which a government is bound by the constraints it imposes and constraints from outside sources. There's the five main categories: non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned fund balance. This will be effective for financial statements beginning after June 15, 2010, so this affects our fiscal year we're in now for the year ending June 30, 2011. And in general, the fund balance should be reported in classifications that comprise a hierarchy based on the extent to which the government is bound to honor and the constraints that you set. And I gave out a list of series of steps of fund balance, and it is in order of the highest constraints to the lowest. And I'll just briefly go over those five. The non-spendable, which means exactly like it sounds, it cannot be spent because it's not in a spendable form. And an example of this would be our inventories or prepaids. The restricted fund balance, the constraints are placed on the use of this resource by laws from other governments or enabling legislation. For example, if we receive a grant and the grant has a specific purpose, we can only spend that grant for things, so that is restricted funds if any of the grant monies are left over. A good example of this is our realty transfer tax. It is restricted by its use. The committed portion of the fund balance, and this is new. This is constraints imposed by formal action of the government's highest level of decision-making authority. These amounts cannot be used for any other purpose unless the government removes or changes the specified use by taking the same type of action that restrict that committed it: resolution, legislation, or ordinance. And it would also include contractual obligations. An example of this would be like the ordinance we have for our open space fund, that basically it ties it to an ordinance and that money is committed. And any contracts that we have at the end of the year where we have a signed contract with a vendor, those funds are also committed and must be pulled out separate on our fund balance. The next level, the assigned fund balance, these are amounts that are constrained by the government's intent to be used for a specific purpose, but they're not restricted nor committed. The intent can be changed. And this is the intent is given by the governing body or a budget committee. And in a good example of this that we saw lately is when we did we budgeted the tie down project in last year's budget. This year we decided to go ahead with the tie down budget, but at a lower level to reduce the project. So what I would do is I would assign those monies, because you have the intent to go ahead with that project, yet we're not in a contract yet. So I'm basically assigning that money to that project at whatever level that we decided on. But that's an example on the assigned fund balance. And then we have the unassigned fund balance, which represents the fund balance that's not been assigned to any other category or any fund, not restricted or committed, or assigned to a specific purpose, like our undesignated rainy day funds. So you can see there's a similarity between the new categories and the old categories. They're just requiring a difference in terms. But I felt it was important to bring this to council in the middle of our fiscal year before we get to our end of our fiscal year, because it gives you an opportunity to make decisions of things that you could see in the future. You could have revenue streams, like with the open space, where you have an ordinance or a resolution for a commitment to fund a certain project. There's all kinds of things that we can discuss with it, so it was important to bring to your attention that this is how our fund balance section works with the new requirements from GASB.
And the amounts in each of these areas are? How do we find that out? Will this be now in the next budget?
This is a financial statement piece.
Right.
And the category dictates the amount. For instance, any realty transfer tax money that is unspent would go in the restricted category, but it might not be the only funds in the restricted category, because we have other grant funds that we receive that we might not have spent yet.
But I mean, it's going to be important to know how much is in each of these categories, wouldn't it? When we're making decisions, right?
Especially when you're looking at the unassigned fund balance, which is our rainy day fund. And there is best practices as far as GASB is concerned as what type of percentage to keep in that unassigned fund balance. Typically, we have 20%, and that's been very good with the bond ratings. They recommend anything from 17 to 20%. So before you commit a lot of money, you'll want to keep that in mind of your undesignated portion, because we've been very cognizant to keep that at a level that is favorable for us for the ratings. Mm-hmm. But as far as the leeway between committed, which would be a council action, like a resolution or an ordinance of the examples I gave, simply an assigned amount, which maybe Dave or the budget committee could do if we want to save money previously budgeted, because we know that project's coming up. You know what I mean? It might happen in the next year, so we might want to keep that by assigning that. Another reason I'm bringing it in the middle of the year, so that gives us time to come in and discuss and further analyze and see how this would come out by June 11.
Well, do we have any funds that aren't in any of these categories that should be in or in the wrong category? Or, I mean,
it's not wrong because it's not in effect yet. Our fund balance, the way that we have it now, is everything's in the right category, and it's either in a reservation, a designation, a restriction, or undesignated.
So the committed fund balance is basically the new category?
That's the new category. We always had restricted, but basically it was restricted and then reserved.
Okay. Not to get ahead of us, but I see the second point you have here is reservation of fund balance. And stop me if I'm kind of getting off course, but it almost seems like with the committed fund balance, we have the ability to maybe do some forward planning. Mm-hmm. That could benefit the county in the long term. For instance, if we see maybe public safety as an area that we may want to put money aside for, maybe without even knowing how we're going to put it aside and spend it at some point in the future, but we anticipate that our public safety costs could go up. Are we able to maybe put restrictions on through either a motion or an ordinance so that we can't get to that particular pile of money unless, there's a supermajority, like, as you say, with the open space fund?
Yes, that's what the committed fund balance would mean, that it's a decision-making authority either by ordinance or resolution to commit this funds, whether it's a future revenue stream, like the open space is the 10% of the excess of revenues over expenditure. So every time that the county has an excess, they share in a little bit too. And when we don't, because of the budget constraints or the economy, we're not obligated to pay them that. And it's the same type of action that to get the ordinance to remove it. So you're absolutely right. And you can put whatever you would want in the ordinance and design it whatever way that you would want. But it is an option.
And it doesn't does it have to be new money like we have with that open space ordinance where it only is representative of the surplus each year? Or could we pull from other accounts that we have, reserves that we have right now, and put into the committed?
No, it does not have to be new money. It would just be committed fund balance money. I don't know if Mr. Baker wanted to add anything.
I think he summarized it very well. Basically, it's a recategorization of the fund balance. And I know Mr. Cole was asking about when we review this. We normally review this with the audit each year as to how the fund balance is categorized. And this is changing up how various, adding different levels, so to speak. And I know what Mr. Phillips was saying, that the council could commit funds in different ways that would perhaps apply to the committed fund balance or even restricted fund balance portion of how monies are allocated. We don't, Mrs. Webb took a look at trying to break down how this would impact us if you looked at last year's audit, for instance, and we didn't really see any major changes except that in terms of the undesignated fund balance. It would now be called the unassigned fund balance, the undesignated, that we currently use. So, you know, it's basically a recategorization of how you look at fund balance.
Okay.
All right. Well, you're right. That was pretty dry, but I agree. It could
necessary.
Be a very, very useful planning tool if we as a body felt that certain funds needed to be set aside for a specific purpose over the course of time. Anything else from council? All right. Thank you, Ms. Webb. Mm-hmm. Mr. Godwin.
Sir, Mr. President, members of council, trying to exercise our newly informed balance process, I believe we have two requests this morning for your consideration for disbursements from the assigned fund balance through the budget process for public safety, i.e. the municipal police grant fund. We have two cities that have requested disbursements, the first being the city of Lewis, who would like their full disbursement of $20,000 for the purchase of a new police vehicle. And their sister city, their city of Rehoboth Beach, would like to request $3,050 for the purchase of chairs, a paper shredder, office supplies, TV, and a DVD player for their police department. I have a motion for you.
Please.
Be it moved, the Sussex County Council approve two disbursements from the annual police grant fund, in the amounts of $20,000 for the city of Lewis and $3,050 for the city of Rehoboth Beach.
So moved. Second, please.
Second.
I'll have a motion and a second to approve the local law enforcement grant request read by Mr. Godwin. Any discussion? Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Godwin. Mr. Parker?
Morning.
Morning.
In 1993 and 94, I represented the County Council on the Assessment Practice Review Committee. This was a statewide committee that was formed to study the assessment practices throughout the state to determine if there is more equitable and economically feasible way of performing this function. The committee was comprised of state legislators, members of the education community, members of government finance departments, fee appraisers, county assessors, and members of the general public. One objective of this endeavor was to bring uniformity into the assessment process for school taxes throughout the state. As a result of many meetings over several months, a comprehensive plan was presented to the state legislature outlining new assessment process to be mandated throughout the state, which would be governed by a new Board of Equalization. The actual assessment process would remain with the counties with oversight by this board. Another part of this comprehensive plan was to require training and certification for all assessors. The purpose of this requirement was to ensure that any new assessment process implemented by this act would be accurately implemented and maintained. There were a series of public meetings held throughout the state explaining this proposal, and much discussion was held at the legislative level. The proposal ultimately was dropped without any action by the state, with the exception of one element, the certification of assessors. The state legislature passed a bill placing the licensing of all municipal and county assessors under the jurisdiction of the Delaware Council of Real Estate Appraisers. This council was given 5 years to adopt standards for the licensing of assessors in Delaware. This 5-year period will soon be up, and they're about ready to adopt those standards. Once those standards are adopted, we have a 3-year period to become licensed and certified in the state. The Delaware Council of Real Estate Appraisers was formed to regulate the independent single fee appraisal industry. There's a clear distinction between the duties of an independent real estate appraiser and a tax assessor. A tax assessor governed by this council would be subject to scrutiny by a member of this council that may often challenge the ability of an assessor through the appeal process. Quite often when appeals are held for local tax problems, the general public is represented by a fee appraiser. Those are the people who would be regulating what we do for a living. This poses a conflict of interest and unfairness to the taxpaying body. Furthermore, this council does not possess the expertise to promote, assist, advise, or counsel any individual within the tax assessment profession. What we do each day to establish assessed values for property tax purposes, does in no way relate to the standards being established by the council. They're going to require, through these new standards that they're going to adopt, approximately 2 weeks of training for all of our assessors and testing in order to be certified to do their job for Sussex County. In addition to that, they're going to be required to take 28 hours of classroom work every 2 years to continue their employment with Sussex County. The main problem I have with this process is that the training that would be involved, the classes that would be held, do not pertain to what we do every day as assessors in Sussex County. We're required to maintain the assessment process as it was established in 1974, the last reassessment that we had. We can't vary from the process that was put in place. The courts have upheld that uniformity is paramount in the assessment process. So what this bill is going to require us to do is to be trained to do a job that we can't do. We don't know how this bill got passed in 2005. We were not aware of it until the city of Seaford had a problem with an appeal. None of the three counties were aware of this. But the clock is ticking, the standards are going to be adopted, and then the new clock starts ticking for us. We have 3 years. My suggestion to Sussex County Council is we pursue legislation to put this matter on hold until we have a reassessment. It makes no sense to me to train people to do a job that you can't come back and do. We sent people to class 20-some years ago, and it's proven to be a total waste because we're locked into doing and utilizing a process that was put in place in 74. Any questions?
Do you have a motion that we would consider?
I didn't prepare a motion, but I certainly would offer a motion that Sussex County Council pursue legislation for an amendment to the state statutes regarding the licensing and certification of county assessors.
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Second. Very good. We have a motion and a second to approve the request of the General Assembly to have legislation drafted and passed that addresses the concerns of the council with regard to assessor certification standards. Any discussion? We'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Benson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Mr. Link?
Here comes Mr. Link.